This is Frida Worden in the studio at CJSFFM, having an interview with Ron Gray, who is the leader of the
Christian Heritage Party of Canada.
Thank you so much for reminding me.
Okay.
And we're going to talk a little bit about what he sees as the key issues for his party in this election.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to start off naming some of your issues?
Okay, I think absolutely the top issue is to restore accountability in the courts. In the last 10 years or so, the courts have been actually violating the Constitution, and I don't know if you read recently the report of the speech that Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin gave down in New Zealand, in which she actually challenged judges to be more activist, regardless of what the law or the Constitution may say. There's an important principle at stake here. In order to protect us and our freedoms from the power of government, there's a system of checks and balances. It's part of our Constitution, that the traditional part of our Constitution goes all the way back to Magna Carta. Traditionally, the government is divided into three branches. The legislature writes the laws, the cabinet and the civil service administer the laws, and the judiciary settles disputes according to the law as they find it written. But when the judiciary begins to rewrite laws or even rewrite the Constitution as they have done, then the system breaks down and we cease to be a democracy and we become a judicial oligarchy, a dictatorship of judges.
Okay, and I see on your platform that you wanted to have a particular remedy for this, a structural remedy.
That's right. The Christian Heritage Party, about 4 years ago, we proposed a solution to this. Now, we don't have any members of Parliament yet, so we sent our idea to the official opposition and to the government caucus, both of which ignored it. But our solution is this. We think that Parliament should establish a standing committee on the judiciary and arm that committee with the right to examine court decisions on the sole ground of their constitutionality. This would preserve the independence of the judiciary in matters of fact and law, but it would also make the judges, the courts, accountable to the committee for conforming to the Constitution. So if the committee saw a decision that it thought violated the Constitution, they would then prepare a bill that would amend that decision, and they'd present that bill to Parliament. Parliament would vote on it. So that would make the courts accountable to the committee accountable to Parliament, and of course Parliament is accountable to the electorate. This is actually not a radical new idea. From Confederation to 1947, every Canadian had the right to appeal decisions of the Supreme Court to the Privy Council, at that time the Privy Council at Westminster. The most famous example of this right being exercised was in 1927-29, when the Supreme Court of Canada had ruled that women are not persons, and a group of women from the Edmonton area, whose statues are now on Parliament Hill, the famous five, appealed that decision and won. The Privy Council ruled that the court was wrong in saying that women were not persons. But we lost that right in 1947, and the courts have been unaccountable. They're not responsible to anybody, and we feel it's time to make them accountable to the Constitution.
Well, this is very interesting. So we have only a little time left, and so I thought maybe I would kind of run down the other issues on your platform with you.
Sure.
And the top one on your website is biblical principles, running the government according to biblical principles. Would you say briefly how that would be done?
Well, this has been the case historically. You know, in the the preamble to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it makes an historical statement. It says, Canada was founded on principles that recognize the supremacy of God, that's capital G, the God of the Bible, and the rule of law. And those are both principles, again, that go all the way back to Magna Carta. In the last 40 to 50 years, we have departed from those standards, and indeed, we now have no standards at all. And that has resulted in Canada sliding into catastrophic debt and serious social and moral decline. And that's why our streets are becoming less safe. And it's why rights are no longer... there's a professor, Ian Hunter. He's a professor emeritus in the Faculty of Law at the University of Western Ontario. He has written that the Supreme Court has vitiated, that is, emptied, both the Supremacy of God clause and the Rule of Law clause. People are no longer treated equally in our courts. They're treated differently depending on what group they belong to. That simply eviscerates the justice system. And so it's time that we restored. If you're going to have a good society, you have to start by having a definition of what is good. And historically in Canada, that has been based on biblical principles of justice and compassion. We've lost that. We need to restore it.
And you mentioned restoring honesty and integrity in government already.
Mm-hmm.
We have protecting marriage and the family. Does that have anything to do with the same-sex marriage?
Yes, it does. And it has to be understood here that we are not attacking anybody's rights, and we're not attacking any group of people. But the fact is that according to some medical studies that have been done by the Canadian Medical Association, homosexual behavior shortens life expectancy by as much as 21 years. If the government gives official recognition to that kind of behavior that is unhealthy and unnatural, then some adolescents will be tempted to experiment with it because the government says it's okay. What could be wrong? Some who experiment will become addicted to that behavior, and those who have legislated approval of that kind of behavior will be guilty of sentencing those children to a premature death.
Hmm. So this then has to do with your next platform plank, which is ensure quality health care through lifestyle education.
Yeah,
is that the kind of lifestyle education
you preventive meant? Medicine generally, and of course lifestyle education is very much a part of that. There are lifestyle practices that are unhealthy and impose a great burden on the healthcare system, and people should be educated about them. And where they have an addiction to an unhealthy lifestyle, reparative therapy should be made available.
Hmm. Yeah. So let's see. Individual privately owned investment accounts for retirement. You think that CPP is going to be broke soon? How would this be different from RRSPs?
Well, they are not different from RRSPs, actually. In fact, it would be a kind of super RRSP. At the moment, RRSPs are something that people either invest in or don't, depending on... You know, back at near the end, just after the end of the Second World War, in order to restrain inflation, the government actually legislated a compulsory savings plan for all citizens. We think that we should reintroduce that, but use it as a replacement for the CPP and the OAP, the money that is now put into taxes for the support of the pension plan would instead be invested in individually owned citizen accounts. What we have as a pension plan right now is more like a Ponzi scheme. If a private firm were to do what the government does with our pensions, we would throw all the directors in jail because it's illegal. I am currently eligible for a pension. I get my pension. But the fact is that you, who are part of the rising generation, as soon as you leave university and get a job, you will begin paying into the system to support my pension. But it probably won't be there for you when you are prepared to retire. Whereas if the same money were put into an investment account vested in your name, that means it belongs to you, it's your property, it travels with you wherever you go, even if you go to another country, because it's your investment account, then when you are ready to retire, your investment account will be ready to support you. And it would be like a sort of super RRSP.
Well,
Actually, the plan was proposed for Canada in 1980 by a Christian politician named Dr. Robert Thompson. It was rejected by Canada, but was adopted by Chile, well, about 82. And today, Chilean workers are retiring wealthy because of investment in this plan. Not only that, but Chile is probably the largest investment powerhouse in Latin America because of the amount of money that has been put into the savings account, the investment accounts of these workers.
But wait.
It doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to the workers.
But wait, you think that the stock market is more of a sure thing and how it's going to grow than the population and the number of workers who would pay into the system?
Oh, yeah. In fact, our population, you know, we are below replacement level on our birth rate.
Are you counting immigration?
Well, immigration has its own problems. You see, right now we are killing 110,000 babies a year. Of the 180,000 immigrants who come in, 110,000 are simply replacing those babies.
Okay, so you're saying 110,000 aborted fetuses?
That's right.
What you're counting.
Now look, project this. The average age of the immigrants who come in to replace those babies in the population is about 33. So in 32 years, when those babies, if we allowed them to live, would be entering their peak productive years, their replacements are going on to the pension. It's an economic disaster in the making.
I see. Okay. So moving along, looking at the issue of restitution and violent crimes.
Yeah.
Yes. You want to say a little about that?
Well, sure. Look, a lot of the spaces in our prison are occupied by people who are there for nonviolent crimes, often property crimes or, you know, often relatively minor crimes, sometimes drug use. Those people really should not be in prison. What they should be doing, we should be putting them to work where they can be productive and earn money and pay restitution to their victims. Restitution is not only better for the victims, it's better for the offenders. It brings them face to face with the consequences of their crime, and it has a restorative effect.
How would you set up restitution for the crime of drug use?
Well, there is no restitution needed there, but if, for example, you have a fraud, a credit card theft, something like that, you know, identity theft that empties somebody's bank account, that criminal is not a violent person and is not dangerous. It would be far better for that person to be working and paying restitution to their victims. And about two-thirds of the spaces in jail are occupied by people of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had them out working and paying restitution, then when we are dealing with violent and sexual offenders, people who are actually dangerous to the public, we should be able to say to those people, you will be in here behind bars until you have been rehabilitated and are no longer dangerous. When I was a journalist part of my beat was the prisons in the Fraser Valley. I used to go over to Kent Prison, which is a maximum security prison, and they had an industrial training program there that was a good program, and it was effective rehabilitation for those who chose to work in it. But the warden used to tell me about 20% of his inmates were hard cases who would say, 10 years, I can do that standing on my head. And they would refuse to participate in the industrial training program. Well, I'd like the warden to have the authority to say, okay, tough guy, but only the time you spend in the training program will count toward your sentence. Now do that standing on your head. You know, when people have proven themselves to be dangerous to society, we need to take them out of circulation until they are rehabilitated.
I think that some crimes, of course, that people say there's no such thing as rehabilitation.
For some, that's true. For example, pedophiles, the psychologists tell us that it's almost impossible to rehabilitate them. Well, then, let's keep them out of circulation. They have demonstrated that they are dangerous. Why on earth should we then put them back into circulation where they can continue to be dangerous?
Okay. So quickly, the last two items in your platform were restoring labor peace and then jobs and prosperity infrastructure.
Okay. The labor peace one is quite simple. It's one that's widely used in Europe. It's a matter of establishing labor courts under the now, we're a federal party, so we are talking about federal jurisdiction. We'd encourage the provincial governments to do the same. Establish a court when a contract is arrived at by free negotiation, by free collective bargaining. That contract is lodged with the court. 6 months before it's due to expire, the court would notify both partners it's time to begin new negotiations. They go into the negotiations, and if 6 months after expiry they still haven't been able to reach a conclusion, then the court would order mediation services to try and help them come to a conclusion. And if after a further 6 months the mediation doesn't work, then an arbitration board would be established, and binding arbitration would settle the problem. Because, you see, in so many cases, strikes are called that hold the public hostage. Think of the strike that was on the waterfront a little while ago. Businesses that depended on those imports were ruined. They had nothing to do with the strike, but they were ruined by it. The infrastructure program is actually a revival of a plan that was used by the federal government, the Liberal government, of Mackenzie King after the end of the Second World War. They were very much afraid that 2 million soldiers coming home would create massive unemployment and would be plunged into another depression. So C.D. Howe, who was then called the Minister of Everything, he was the Finance Minister, Minister of Defense Production, and several other portfolios, he instructed the Bank of Canada to make loans that were virtually interest-free to provinces, municipalities, and other local authorities for infrastructure projects, ports, roads, highways, bridges, railways. The PGE in BC was built on this kind of money. Because it was virtually interest-free, the increased economic activity generated more revenue for the local governments. And with that revenue, they were able to repay the money. And since it was interest-free, it didn't compound. When they repaid the money, the currency that had been created by the Bank of Canada was retired, so it didn't have an inflationary effect. But the projects left behind all of this infrastructure. Well, our infrastructure is beginning to decay. Our unemployment rate is about twice what it was in those days. We need that stimulus to the economy and to employment. We need the new infrastructure, and it's a plan that has been proven to work. We think it's time to revive it. It could also be used for construction projects that would be water and sewage treatment plants, urban and interurban passenger rail services, educational capital projects, things like that could also be funded by this kind of money.
Christian Heritage Party leader Ron Gray, who's been speaking with CJSF FM. Thank you very much, Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Frieda.